The following is a presentation of Foosball Radio.
If it's too loud, you're too old.
We cannot believe it. We just went, oh!
I was a good bar player.
Okay. I was very vocal.
Very vocal.
I wanted to win.
This is Todd Lafredo. You're listening to Foosball Radio.
Foosball Radio. On the road.
Hey there, I'm Tom Robinson. It's Foosball Radio on the road, spending our weekend virtually in Colorado for the 2022 Colorado State Championships, and really getting some great information from people on the ground there at the hotel in just outside of Denver. And it's been a fantastic weekend so far. We're very lucky this time to have Alan Montrone from Florida on with us, who's there at Colorado State. Alan, welcome to Foosball Radio on the road.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. So, first of all, is this your first Colorado State championship?
No, it's my second one. My first one was in 2018.
Okay, a couple of years ago. Okay, so that was just before COVID then.
Yeah, it was definitely before COVID.
Now, how does that compare to this year? What was there a difference as far as attendance goes?
I think this year is bigger, I believe.
Okay.
I think we had the same amount of tables. I know last year they had more tables, I believe. But this year, I think they had maybe a little bit less tables then as well, too. I think this year ran really smooth. I think they did a great job with moving the matches along. If people were not at their matches in a certain time limit, they were getting forfeited without question. So
Right. It
really helped out, especially with open doubles and everything.
I know that Adam Gilson, who's also with us for this edition of Foosball Radio on the Road, gets very frustrated about people not showing up in time for their matches. Right, Adam?
Oh, yeah. That's one of my things. If I were going to give advice to people to help the sport of foosball, one of the first things I would tell them is, if you're at a tournament, get to your table as soon as your match is called.
There it is.
Yeah. I mean, you see it a lot. You're seeing 30 people are taking 30 minutes to get to a match, and they do that five times. You're looking at 2.5 hours that were just added on just by one team.
Wow. It's cumulative, and it's ridiculous. It's just unfair. It's insulting, and it's selfish. And I say this as somebody that did that themselves for a long time when I first started playing. You know, I got into that kind of jive, you know, but I know now, you know, getting older, a little more, whatever, less of a jerk, I guess. You know, just don't do it. But I'm curious, Alan, this is, so you said 2017 was the last
2018.
Yep. 4 years. So for you as a player between 4 years ago and now, has there been much of a change for you, or has it just been steady Eddie, or where are you at?
As a player?
Yeah.
I think as a player, I think I'm a better player. I'm definitely taking my time, I think, a little bit more, compared to, but that's something I've been working on for a while. I think my whole life as a player. Yeah. I definitely think I'm a better player. I'm trying to think, really, it's, you know, that's the one thing that I think I've completely been working on, is really just trying to take my time, which it's tough for me because I'm a field player.
Mm, yeah.
And it's playing with certain players that I play with. I do a lot of passing, of course. And there's a lot of times where I try to get the ball out quick, especially like, let's say that I get a block. First thing I want to do is hurry up while the forward's pouting a little bit. I want to get that ball to my forward as quick as possible. But I definitely think I'm a better player. All around, I don't know if I'm a better player. I'm thinking probably about the same, because I just really work on my goalie game compared to singles and all that other stuff.
Oh, so you're right. You spend most of the time in the goal then?
Yes, I try to take pride in my goalie, but I never. You'll see me straight out say I'm not playing forward, but I can. But it's I think a goalie is an art form.
Yeah,
I'm with you on that.
why do you say that, Alan? Why is a goalie?
Because number one, so many people want to be forwards, and the first thing they want to do if their forward is struggling is tap their forward on the hip and say, let's switch. In my eyes, a goalie should be looking at their forward and trying to keep them pumped up, trying to keep them motivated, try to keep them into the game to where they're, you're not just switching back and forth. Because as a goalie, you know, if you're getting drilled, you've got to figure it out. And it's like I tell my forwards all the time, listen, just get me to 4-4. I'm going to get you the 4-4 block. Don't worry about if I'm getting scored on or not. You just keep your head in the game. And that right there a lot of times keeps them with the confidence. So, and then again, for me, passing, it's, you know, a lot of people throw passes up there and they're a million miles per hour that nobody can catch. And they act like they're passing, but they're really not passing. They're just whipping passes up there that are uncatchable. So, again, for me, it's an art form. It's about, you know, hopefully making your forward happy, keeping them confident the whole time. And, you know, for me, there are a lot of good forwards out there that want goalies. And there's a lot of people out there that are forwards that always want to play forward. And like I said, if you're always constantly tapping a player on the hip saying, hey, let's switch, you're not learning how to get out of certain situations.
I like that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
How fast should a pass be?
There's like a separation. So somebody said Todd Lafredo has a specific speed that he does his passes to where when you hit that pass, it's not a shot, because if you do a shot pass, the timing of the other forward's five rod trying to slap it back at you, if you hit it really hard, it's just like a shot. So they're used to that timing. So they're going to slap it back at you just like a shot or a pass. They're going to hit it right back at you. But if you hit it just at the right pace to where it's a little bit, it's like medium. It's like just under what a shot would be like, as in, I'd say about half the speed of a shot. And so what's happening is they're going to swing when you do it. And then right as they come back to, you know, come back to swing again, it's probably hitting their rod, five rod. So if it does hit their five rod, it's going right back to your forwards three or five rod itself. Does that make sense?
Yes,
it does. So to quantify it, say if a pull kick on the three bar dink, a little faster.
Yeah. Yep. And like I said, because they'll swing, and then once they pull back to swing again, it hits their five rod, and then the ball will just literally roll right to your forwards five rod. So if you don't execute the pass, your pass is not going to be like, it's not going to be a detriment. It's going to your partner's five. So technically it would be considered a clear. Does that make sense?
Dope.
Absolutely. So that makes
either
sense.
either you're going to execute it to where it goes to your partner's three rod, or if the forward on the other team blocks it, it's still going to come back to your partner's five rod. So it's technically still a pass.
Right. So,
so you have to hit it just hard enough to where it's not, like I said, it's like half the speed of what a shot would be.
It's a really interesting
thing. There's many
thing.
Times where you see people swing and miss it, you know?
Yeah. No, it's slowing down and picking your holes. And of course, looking to see what goes open. Of course, those are all things that go into any position on the table, but especially for goalies. If you're passing on that two rod, it's essential. Spent a lot of time in the goal myself, and I'm really trying to focus on that.
Well, that's the thing is as a goalie, you know, it's hard to get through four rods, you know, the forwards two rods and the goalies two rods. You've got a lot of men in the way. So if you just concentrate on just getting, because when you look at how much space they have in the three rod, there's a lot of space there. So there's a lot of places to pass it. And if you just sit there and concentrate now, all I have to get through is the big three rod spacing and then the two rod or the five rod spacing into certain areas. As a goalie, now it really simplifies what your game is, because so many people, when they get into the game as a rookie or a beginner or, you know, some amateurs, you know, they're not looking at the lanes that you're passing it to. They're looking at all the men that are on the table, and they're thinking, oh my God, I got to get through all these men, when really you just have to get through, you know.
Yeah.
If you look at the three rod, you're technically passing between two of those men, not all three of them. You're passing between two of them.
Yep.
And then the lanes that are over there for the five rod are actually pretty big.
Much better odds.
And And to me, it's almost like scoring. You've scored by giving your partner that opportunity to score. And if your partner gets more opportunities to score and they get more confident, the more confident your forward is, the better your forward is.
Yeah, the stats that Clay Toomey did years ago and that exist out there for anybody that wants to learn how to do them, just bear that out. A clear from a goalie, if you're clearing it above what? I think it was 56. I think he said that if a goalie is clearing at 70% in doubles, that team is not losing.
Right.
Clearing. Yep. Just clearing.
Yep. And he says all you have to do is get it by the three rod.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so if you're not trying to if you're not trying to kill it and you're not shooting over the center all the time,
right?
And it's again, you know, any real pro master forward will always say, just clear the ball. I don't need you to score. I need you to clear it or get me the ball.
Right. You know, it's a goalies like that in that adhere to that mindset that know that that's the way to win. They wear a different kind of cape, you know. So how this weekend at Colorado State? Who'd you play with? How'd it go?
I played with Dan Benatar, who is from Canada. Mm-hmm. He actually, this is his first Colorado State as well, too. So basically, I think it's his first time in the United States playing. I'm not. Don't quote me on that.
I think he might have. He might have been in one tournament this last year. I did see his name on a previous tournament. I forgot exactly which one. It might have been Tornado Championships. Okay. I think he might have been there.
Yeah, he might have been. He's a good player.
It also solves the mystery because Clay, we had talked to just before you, had and people that hear this are going to hear this stilted every week or so. But he did say that he just played a match against you and Pat Benatar. So now I know what he meant, and you know that's Clay being Clay.
Well, yeah, Pat, yeah. Dan, we'll call him Dan. You know, Clay will call him Pat.
But the bottom line was Clay said that they did hit him with his best shot.
They hit him with his best shot. How did they hit him with his best shot? I got it.
Pat Benatar.
It's not the best.
Was there like a da-doom-tsh after that?
Yes.
No, it didn't even deserve that. But anyways, I totally am stealing your thunder, Alan. So you all played and it went.
It went we won. I'll mm-hmm. leave it at that.
No, I mean in general though. Good. Yeah, and you're in the event in general. Yeah.
Oh, in the event. So the very next match, we were lucky enough at 1:30 in the morning to play Ryan Harvey and Jeff Pipkin Jr. And let's put it this way: everything went our way against Lindsay and Clay, and everything did not go our way against Ryan and Jeff. So,
ouch.
We didn't. Let's put it this way. It definitely went their way. So we did not play well in that match. So we lost that match. And then we didn't play until I think almost 6 o'clock tonight for our next match. And we...
Wait. I'm sorry. Just before you... So the last match you played started at 1:30 in the morning this morning. And the next match you played was at 6 p.m.?
Yeah. Yeah. So What's funny, it was funny because it was like they wanted to get some of the matches going for pro doubles. So they had certain people play a couple matches, but then they had a lot of other people that didn't even play any matches. So literally, it was very strange. So literally, you know, we got stuck playing last night, and then everybody else kind of started today on the pro doubles type thing. So the thing was that we had a bye the first round, which actually Clay and Lindsay, I think, had a bye as well, too. So there were teams that didn't have byes. So that was one round, technically. And then after that, we played Clay, and then we played Ryan. So then we lost. And then, so that's technically three rounds or whatever, actually two rounds since we didn't go up. But so we did have to wait for a couple teams. And then, of course, there was a lot of conflicts on people playing. I think Joel Munoz had to play a match, and the loser of his went into the loser bracket, and then there were two other matches before us. So, and Joel Munoz has been doing well this weekend with other events, so he kind of held up the chart a little bit.
Got it. Yeah, the conflicts are tough. It's especially when you have more players and less tables. That certainly can be an issue sometimes. But it sounds it sounds like there were some good things going on because, of course, open doubles was done. What, Adam, I think you said 13 hours before it actually got played last year?
Yeah. I mean, you know, cold comfort in times like these. I
right.
mean, you still have events. And this is not, I don't believe, if we're talking about it and getting down to the nitty gritty, it's not a knock on the Chapmans or Tim Walters or TSK that you would have a match at 1:30 in the morning and not play the next match until 6 p.m. that night.
Mm.
No, I don't blame them.
No, why would you? I mean, they have their tournament directors. They have the bottom line that they're dealing with, and they're giving people an experience. But I do think there's something problematic about that, right? And I do think that the problem exists in how we accept how tournaments are, how we digest tournaments and how we go to them and how we deal with them. And that's a much larger issue. And it's just wild to me. There's no other sport in the world where that happens.
Well, I think the fact that there are, let's put it this way. I think this is the only sport in the world that really you go to a tournament and you play in 6, 7, 8, 9 different events.
Right.
You know, most of them you go and you have one event. You know,
or two.
This one, you have like 9 events. Like, if you go to I don't do pool tournaments and I don't do dart tournaments or anything, but I guarantee you, there's not 9 different events,
right?
Either one of those. So, I think with Colorado State being such
per
a special, correct? Yeah,
we're talking about 40
exactly.
40 maybe for a 4-day period or something, right? Like
40 what? 40 events.
40 events total, or 40. You know, the you're not playing in everything, but there's just a lot going on. But sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah. So, I mean, when you think about it, you have, I mean, they had 160 players in just the King of the Ring.
Wow.
So you have 160 players in King of the Ring. You had 96 teams in open doubles. You had 95 teams in expert doubles. I just checked these stats before I came on. So, but 160 players just in the King of the Ring, which is technically a specialty event. And so that right there is going to hold up a ton of things. So you have that singles event, then you have open singles, then you have pro singles, then you have expert singles, then you have amateur singles, rookie singles, beginner singles, women singles. So that's a lot of events right there that are just,
right.
I mean, right there is just singles. So,
and then you have a couple good players that could possibly, like lower ranked players that are gumming things up.
And, yeah, you know, yeah. I was very surprised at how many players were in open doubles when it comes to or open singles that are, you know, rookies or beginners. You know, in my opinion, I think that they should have maybe rookie singles or beginner singles or amateur singles or expert singles or doubles the same way. Earlier in the week, or like, you know, Thursday or Friday, and if you're the top qualifier, one or two teams, then you should be able to go into open singles or pro singles, or I'm sorry, open singles. Other than that, I think the open event should really be possibly for expert, pro, and open. That way, it would just make you know, less conflicts.
There's been a lot of talk about that. I know Jim Stevens, who of course spends a lot of time with us on Foos Talk Live, he's of the opinion that beginners and rookies and amateurs should not be in the open events.
Yeah, I personally, when I was a rookie, I didn't even enter open doubles or open singles.
Right.
Just because I knew for a fact I wasn't going to win it. So, you know, and lucky for me in Tampa, I get to play against a lot of top pros and top.
Yes.
Masters,
oh, you're in the Tampa market. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. You've got some of the of the best players
so
in the world.
I get to get my butt whipped by them there. I don't have to do it at a tournament
and pay them money.
But yeah,
I
never even entered
those. Somewhere.
No.
Fly somewhere to get my butt whooped by them.
It sometimes happens 2 days a week for me. So,
right.
But it teaches you. It teaches you a lot.
So you play. You can actually play twice a week in your scene.
Yeah, we have two local tournaments. One is a monster. Usually that's the lower ranked players.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to get the experience, but there's a lot of times Eric Holtner will have some people over. I used to back in the day when I had my house, I would have people over as well too, and we get a lot of really good, you know, doubles matches going.
Right.
Wow. So, and cool. It's that's where the real practice goes compared to a local tournament. But we're lucky enough to have players like Eric Holtner, Tommy Yore, just a lot of the good local players, Scott O'Hare, sometimes Billy Pappas, sometimes Blake Robertson. So,
right.
But there's even more players that don't come out as well too. Bobby Diaz, all those players. But there's a lot of times that we get to play against a lot of those players on a weekend or on a Friday night.
Lots of legendary names, to say the least. And how many years have you actually been playing professionally?
Well, professionally, I don't know about professionally. Like I said, I've been ranked a pro, I think, over a year and a half now.
Okay.
In doubles. But I played, I think, like 1999 to about 2005, 2006. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say really as much on tour, but more locally and a couple of tour events here and there, nothing crazy. And then I took about 15 years off and then came back probably like 5 years ago. So roughly I would say about 10 years. But
okay.
On tour, I haven't toured that much this last year or two, but before the COVID, I for about a year and a half, I hit some consistent tournaments.
Yeah. And what was the first time you played foosball at all? I mean, how old were you?
I was, I believe, 19 or 20 years old.
Oh, okay.
And moved in with a buddy of mine right behind Rudy's sports bar. And he played foosball back in the day. And he was like, hey, you want to go up and play some foosball? I'm like, I played soccer my whole life. I'm like, I'm not any good at foosball. He's like, you got to come up. There's a lot of great players that are up there. There's a lot of some of the best players in the world are up there. So my local tournament started playing against Bobby Diaz, Casey Pruitt, Ron Nivoy, Johnny Horton.
Johnny Horton.
A couple other players, you know, but I hate to miss names, Tom Yore. Mm-hmm. But I was lucky enough to, Chris Darcheski, lucky enough to play with those guys because one of the best tournaments was on our Tuesday night. We had a 3,200 limited, which was the top master players were 2,200. And if you started out, you had 1,000 points. So with it being a 3,200, a pro master had to play with a beginner.
Oh.
So when you got a person like Chris Darcheski saying, hey, how many points you got? And I got 1,000. He's like, we're playing. So we played for like a month straight. And then next thing you know, I'm getting bumped up because we're winning so much. But yeah, I was lucky enough to get to play against those players pretty much my whole life.
See, and I think I want to backtrack because this is why I firmly believe that it's important that new players can play against top players in major tournaments. However, the format has to be to give that opportunity to happen. You just have a better player base and a player base that gets better faster. And in my opinion, that's just is only going to make things better mm-hmm. for everybody else and for the sport itself because, you know, and this is what we saw. I don't know if you followed at all, Alan, and now I just realized because we talked about this because I thought I didn't realize you just turned pro so recently because I was wondering why you weren't at the Thunderdome earlier this year, but it's because you couldn't play in it, right?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. And but I mean at the Portland mashup that happened in September, they followed the Swiss system and they did that thing where they had the qualifiers for open doubles, right? And it was only doubles, but they had the top 16 teams qualified into like the money rounds and the bottom 16 teams it was the medal rounds. And regardless of that, which I think is fair to have like the bottom teams only playing for medals, they still got the chance to get their butts handed to them, right? And I think there's something to be said for that opportunity that you're just not going to get if you don't play in that. I mean, personally, the way I was raised was like, hey, you got to go and take your licks and just, you know, get your butt kicked. And my goodness, the pedigree of players, the players that you just named that you played with when you started, like, you know, you could only dream to have that kind of,
yeah,
you know, those kind of players that you're playing with when you first start playing. And that's just you know, I don't know. That's just amazing to me. That's just so awesome. But you know, and speaking of tournaments, I first met you at the Beachtown Beatdown, and
yes.
We worked. We got to work some matches together, and I really enjoyed not only just your ability to elocute, but your take on things. I just loved it. And I remember one of the matches we watched, I think it was Clay Toomey
and WWE versus
McKelly.
McKelly Nasty and John Cunningham.
John Cunningham. And there was a controversy. And your take on how it played out, I loved, because it wasn't emotional. It was not like you would be, I don't mean you were emotional, like you were looking at it as a, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, how would you describe that? Like, it was clinical.
It was it was almost a strategic, number one, it was Clay was, a situation happened where Clay believed that when McKelly Nasty took his hand off the rod, he had his hand one way on the rod, and then he switched it to it and then went for a shot. And I believe they scored that. Now, in that situation, if I remember correctly, it was 3-2, and it would have been 4-2.
Yeah.
And that would have brought because I believe, if I remember correctly, Clay was up 1-0.
It was 2-0. This was the third game. It was huge. Okay. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So it was 2-0. So it was the point in the match where they could have made their turnaround, or Clay could have tried to make sure that that didn't happen. Now,
right?
Because there's so many instances in so many situations, so many matches. That is the key. There's so many turning points in a match that, if it went this way, it would have gone, you can win. If it went that way, you lose. And if you can control that and not give in to certain situations, and you're able to control that, because, I mean, we all know that in doubles, as a forward, you can't control what ball goes in the goal. Mm. But if there's a certain situation where somebody gets a goal that is possibly illegal, you've got to be able to stand up and fight for that. And
right.
if you can make that situation into your advantage, it could, you know, that could be where the win comes from or the loss comes from.
And I think that's why thank you for saying that, because that was a thing that I thought was nicely highlighted by you in that moment. Because I think anybody on the outside looking in, especially if you just started playing, we're looking at David and Clay and thinking, oh, they're cruising, they're up 2-0 in game score.
Yeah.
And it's just,
why are they worried about it? Why are they worried about it?
Why fight for that? But you're damn right, because this is something we always talk about, controlling the rhythm.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of people don't understand about timeouts.
Mm.
You know, when people take timeouts, certain part of the match, I mean, if you look at Tommy Atkinson, when he's taking a timeout at 1-0 and he just got the possession of the ball after he just scored, but the other team gave up the ball and he calls timeout, that's one of those mental aspects of when the perfect timeout is. I've always said, you know, if you score a goal and the other team has it on the foos and you call timeout, you're only giving them opportunity to think about their pass now and how, what shot they're going to shoot. And you're giving them extra time. Or if it is you score, you use that energy that you just got to from the goal to use it on your defense. When you're able to block them, now you control the ball. Now you call the timeout instead of giving them the opportunity to think about their pass. Now once you've called that timeout, you give them the opportunity to think about how they're going to lose the game, because you're controlling it now.
Mm.
I think Blake Robertson, talk something similar to you. I believe it was Texas State, and Brandon Munoz was calling timeouts when he scored, because he liked it when he was up, and he wanted them to think about when he was up. He wanted them to think about it, but Blake said that, you know, in his opinion, he likes to be able to steal the ball, call a timeout with that possession, to let them think about how they just lost the possession.
It's an interesting philosophy. It's something that, you know, timeouts are strategic, yeah, but to have that, that's pretty deep to think about it that way.
Oh, yeah. You believe me, as a goalie, there's nothing worse than when it's 3-2 and they have 3 and you have 2 and your partner just gave the ball up, they've got on the 3 bar, they call timeout as a goalie. now you're sitting there thinking about, shoot, I've got to get this block. I've got to get this block.
Yeah.
What is he going to do? And then they score on you and you're just sitting there going, we're defeated now.
Right.
You know, yeah. And it's, I mean, that those timeouts are so mental, you know, it's, that's the difference between somebody giving up or somebody getting the perfect momentum to boost them to keep going.
Mm-hmm. Psychological warfare. No question.
Oh yeah. Wow. Like I said, watch Tommy Atkinson's timeouts. He's usually calling a timeout right as he gets the steal, and he wants the other team to think about now he's got control of the match or he's got control of the game compared to, you know, calling timeout when the other person has it or has the foos, and now they've got to sit down and go, okay, all right, I can foos it and I can pass this pass, and then once I get it, I'm going to shoot this shot.
Right.
You know, compared to stealing it and saying, here, think about that now.
And here's the artistry, though, right? I mean, this is the thing about foosball is that, like, you're not wrong about anything you just said, Alan. You're 100% correct. And what these players are doing is 100% correct. But I think the fascinating thing about foosball and the art history of foosball is that all of that is decided in the moment. Like, there's no book. There's no book where you're like, oh, well, if this, then that, let's do this, right? And it's happening. It's like, it's just, it has to be in the moment of knowing when it is. And it just becomes natural to those kind of players and to anybody, really, I think, that you can just get to that point, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing with the Brandon Munoz, him taking those timeouts. Let's put it this way. What he does, there's nothing I can say is wrong. It's not wrong what he does. If that's his theory and he's got the theory and it's working for him, and it has been for a while now, believe me, that's not wrong. My theory is my theory, so... It's not something that, you know, I'm trying to change people's belief on, but that's in my head. It's the right call. Mm. Believe me, it's working for Brandon. So I'm never telling Brandon not to do it because it's working for him nowadays. So believe me, he takes two timeouts every single game and it's working for him.
Right.
So you can look at it that way and think that's perfect too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I just, Alan, I meant to, what do you do like professionally? What do you do job wise? Are you retired or what do you do?
No, I wish I was retired. I do handyman work right now. I was in the restaurant business for 20-something years as a general manager and a manager. And that's when I told you I took the 15 years off of foosball was because I couldn't do a Friday night local or I couldn't do a weekend away. Yeah. So, you know, my dishwasher calls in sick because he...
No, you were a GM.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so literally I was the person people would ask me, hey, what are you doing Saturday? I'm like, well, I technically have the day off, but I don't know if I can go hang out. So that's where I took my 15 years off.
What kind of restaurant, like, was it a fine dining, or you know what I mean? Like
it was Chili's.
Okay.
Cool. It was Chili's.
No, I love Chili's. Full disclosure, I don't want to digress, but
not this week. You didn't like Chili's, that's for sure. Not this week.
Hey, don't get personal here. It's very well documented how the last couple of days have gone for me, but yeah, no, I did not like Chili's the last couple of days, but no, I like the restaurant.
Oh, is that what happened? Is that where the
it was not from? No. But the thing came from is the petri dish that my 5-year-old son goes to school at and brought back with him this plague upon my house. But no, it wasn't that. But I was a manager at a restaurant at a Caro's. Do you have Caro's over there?
No.
Caro's is like a Denny's with one less health code violation.
So it's below Denny's.
I know.
Something like
you
kinda that.
Want that. So then, you want that.
You know when the dishwasher basically requested the weekend off, and then you said you couldn't do it because there was nobody else to do it, and then he didn't show up, but you still had to keep him employed the very next week because you needed the dishwasher?
Yeah, and you just hand out Dixie cups, and yeah, no, it's one of those things of somebody, if there's the holding, you know, you've got the soup station, and somebody accidentally kicks their, oh, God, it's so gross. We don't need to talk about restaurant horror stories, but I will tell you this. I will tell you this. We upgraded our restaurant rating after I convinced them to move where the bussers would put everything they were bussing, all the dishes. When we got them to move that away from where the soup holding area was, because those two things next to each other was no bueno. Anyways, back to you, Tom. Yeah.
I eat at restaurants.
We're talking about foosball, right?
Yeah.
Wow. No, it's it sounds like a coming to Colorado State. Obviously, you see a lot of your friends from Florida. So, what are the after parties like for you guys?
Well, I mean, mainly it's a lot of it's down in the tournament room. It's a lot of music playing. It's a lot of drinking. I'm very chill though.
Okay.
But I'm not the huge partier. I take pride in the fact that nobody's seen me drunk ever. So
nice.
But it's good times. I mean, basically, there's so many matches that keep going on. So eventually, what you hear is or what you see is a lot of mess around matches, having fun matches, funsy matches.
Are you gonna get in on that?
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
It just depends. You know, I just turned 50 this year, so it's not like the good old days, but, I still try to get into the funsy matches. Those are really when you, get to play against people or meet people that you haven't met before. Mm-hmm. And you also find out who you might be able to partner with the very next week or the very next tournament. So
I love that. Well, are you still in events?
I only played pretty much open doubles and pro doubles. So, it wasn't a great weekend. I should have blocked better. I played with Noelia Arcos in open doubles.
Oh, nice.
And we met some good teams there. So, I should have blocked a little bit better.
You played at Beatdown with her, right?
Yes, correct.
You two are a great, your synergy, your chemistry together is so good. I love the chemistry that you have because you're this calming presence back there. Noelia is just like, you know, she just catches on fire up there.
Yeah.
But I'm speaking to the choir because you know, but for those that don't know, once she gets going, she's a force to be reckoned with, but she also can be her own worst enemy. Right. And I think that thing that you provide as a calming agent is good. And so, but how did it go? And so you played in open doubles with her.
Yeah, we played open doubles. We ran into our first match. We won pretty easy. And then the second match we ended up playing, Mike Splane and, tip of my tongue, but, let me take a look. It was, the master, the Foos master, the, played with Mike Green in. Oh my gosh, you're making me think now. Hold on, sorry. He did the Foosball Master Tour.
I actually know who you're talking about. I just want to see if you get there.
You're supposed to help me.
I'm not. I'm talking about
Phil.
I just like the tension.
Talking about Phil Schlafer.
What you got, Tom?
Phil Schlafer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I saw that.
So, it could have gone better. Phil started scoring on me pretty good. Then I started blocking him for a little bit. And when I started blocking him, Mike actually hit a couple out of the back. So it was that perfect timing, that backbreaker type thing. So we only went three games, but there were some tight three games. But Phil played really well. Mike Splane actually played great. He hit, I think, 3-1 game from the back, which didn't help. So, like I said, Noelle and I play. We have so much fun together because we love joking around. We make fun of each other, she's like my little Tommy Yor partner. So I love playing with Tommy Yor, but she reminds me of playing with Tommy Yor.
Yeah.
So she's like my little Tommy Yor since Tommy Yor basically doesn't play that much anymore.
Yeah.
So. She's my little spitfire, but she's awesome. She's got such good energy and she is hilarious. She practices nonstop and she's good. Well, she's good for the game. She's really good
for
the game.
No, one of the highlights of my year was me and Jim Stevens winning a mixed 4-on-4 with her and Lexi. What a hell of a run that was. That was so much fun. And I think about who we were beating, you know, teams with Kevin Romero, with Spraderman, with whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. Like it was just like we were on and Lexi was the calming presence. Noelia was the talent. Jim was the shocker doing random stuff, and I was the shit talker. You know, like it was not pleasant. I'm like, I was like, some, I was hearing myself, and I was like, God, I'm a dick. Why am I such a dick?
But you have to be sometimes. You have to be,
right? Because there's people there, like my Mike Yore was there doing what Mike Yore does. I'm like, oh no, come on.
Yeah.
I grew up around a beat up tournament soccer brown top with people that grew up back then in that time period. So I like it's. But the point is the point is the level of talent and ability with somebody like Noelia just amazes me. I just love it, and I'm glad that you two partner up. I think that's great.
Yeah. We have so much fun together. Even when we lose, it's okay because again we have time, we have fun together. But she's awesome.
This was the first. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say it's great to see that with like Tornado Championships and now with Colorado State, there's a really good blend of people from other countries that are really competing and really in the mix of things. Of course, Brandon and Kevin and Noelia. I mean, just great to see. And of course, Rob Atha coming all the way over from England to play and making it all the way to the singles finals with Tony. Great to see that.
Rob played incredible.
Yeah, he really did.
Well, so far, I think, is the finals happening right now while I'm upstairs? I'm not sure.
I think it was underway maybe like an hour ago, something like that.
Talk about live reporting from the scene.
Yeah, right.
I love it. Let me look. I'm curious. I haven't.
Because I know I was up here and I know Tony had just beaten Todd, but I knew that we started pretty much coming on, so it might actually be happening right now. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. I know because Rob was going ball for ball there for a bit with Tony. Although Tony, at one point, I think it was in the second game of the set, kind of manhandled them a bit.
They're in the second set.
They're in the second set now?
Are they?
So he had to double dip them, I think.
Game one, second set, 3-3.
Wow. That's exciting.
And Rob Atha is just dressed to the nines. My dude just came back from Nordstrom's.
Yeah, he's got the button down collared long sleeve shirt on, but the sleeves are pulled up just a tad bit.
Yeah, just a tad bit untucked. White sneakers. Yep. He's got like this Dr. Demento, I just came from TJ Maxx vibe.
He's got style.
Yep.
He's ripping dead bar pole sides.
And Tony,
his steak was on fire too.
Yeah.
Did you check out the shirts that Dylan and Don wore for the finals?
Yes, they were
of open doubles.
Snazzy. I didn't see what the images were. I just saw that they were matching patterns.
They're matching, but they're not. They were, the one was a little off from the other. But I asked him if they were in an ugly sweater contest earlier or something.
It's like the old days back in TS and what was it, Dynamo, where there were collared shirts, like golf shirts, for a lot of the big tournaments. I mean, I don't know if we need to bring that back, but, you know.
Well, like I said, hey, whatever brings fans together. I mean, I was just happy to see Dylan and Don in the finals.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, that was awesome. That,
you know, sure.
I mean, of course, I like it when Tony wins, but I was hoping that it would win for them.
Those are your boys, though, right?
Dylan's such a good guy. Dylan's talking about an amazing player is you really play goalie for Dylan one day and you'll realize just how good he is. His five bar is just unbelievable and he can shoot any shot that you put on him. And when he does it, it's hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. what is he in his 20s or 30s?
Offhand, it's got to be mid 20s. I'm not 100%. I'm old, so I don't ask people their age, but it's mid-20s.
That's what I was thinking. Mid-20s. Yeah, he's definitely very youthful, but, I mean, just great athletic player.
Oh, yeah. If you look at his wrists look like most people's forearms. Yeah. So when he hits the ball, it's just Like I said, there's another sound. Sounds like when different. You talk about Billy Pappas, when he hits it, it's Dylan has the same sound, especially from the two bar in the back. I mean, when he hits when he hits the shot, he hits some pull kicks in locals, and I swear it's almost like it's. Or I'm sorry, he hits long pull shot from the back. It looks like a pull kick.
Yeah,
it's that long. Wow, it's so far over there.
Yeah, so I'm doing that a couple of times in a match today.
I think he went through a couple people.
So
I'm watching this match right now, Athan and Spriteman, and I see Spriteman is doing push shots from his two bar from his left hand.
Yeah,
because you know what the hell? Why not do whatever you want? but you know, I'm sitting there, I'm watching. I see Mark Krause in the background, Sparky, James Castillo back there. I see. All these foosers. There's Dana Mar. You know, I wish I was there. It's always so fun. I mean, right? This is the thing about foosball. You know, you just miss all these people. I see Lindsay Albert. I even see Al Najjar, who... No, never mind. No, I'm glad I'm not there. I'm kidding, Al.
Well, what's funny is I wasn't even going to come until Friday. Last second, I said, you know what? I want to come.
Seriously? Cool.
It's such a cool tournament, and the fact of... It being right in the middle of the whole country, you know, you got players from California, you got Arizona, you've got Texas. I mean, you just don't see a whole lot of, especially like, you know, Florida State's a big tournament. It should be a bigger tournament when it comes to money wise, but what can you do? But it's literally in the bottom corner, you know, so it's not easy to get to. It's not easy to get to,
you know?
So, that's the thing is this thing is so centrally located that you just get all the best players from the United States to come to this thing. And I enjoy the hotel.
Yeah, it is. You're staying at the site, at the venue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a cool venue. It's, you know, it looks like a Renaissance period kind of esque. It's a good vibe, but it's fascinating to me because you think about the Hall of Fame. I don't think the Hall of Fame has ever had such a stacked level of competition as the Colorado State has had, say, in the last 5 years or so.
About the players that were inducted?
No, just the amount of players that are there. Just
the
amount and the level of players. Like it's just like and not just like in the open level area. Like you look at the beginners. I was looking at the expert brackets and the beginners brackets. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is silly.
Yeah. Oh, believe me, the beginners aren't beginners, the rookies aren't rookies, the experts aren't experts, and some of the pros should be something else.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy to win an expert event here. It's not. So, like I said, look at amateur doubles right now, has Evan McGregor in it.
Yes.
You know, Ethan Wynn, they're all in amateur doubles, and those two guys are huge up-and-coming players that are really just, they're going to go to a next level soon.
Oh, yeah. Probably after this year, and more than likely, I would think that they'll both be stepping up.
Ethan won King of the Ring, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you watch any of that, Alan? I didn't.
I watched a little of it. I didn't watch the finals because I was actually watching another match over on the side. Because they were. I mean, that's the only thing about the King of the Ring. It's like you got players that are only going to five, but then some people have to go to eight. It's to me, that's why I didn't enter it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
It's amazing that Tony won it last year, especially when players that are probably amateurs or experts that are ranked rookie that are only having to go to five or four to beat them. It's extremely tough.
Yeah.
So.
I think it was Blake that won it last year, but I mean, it still speaks to your point.
Blake did, yep.
Yeah, because you know you still have somebody that just came off of a. Open singles win at Worlds title. That seems to be kind of the... And I was expecting Munoz to win it this year, but that was not the case, as it was with Robertson last year.
Yeah. I think it was Tony the year before, if I remember correctly.
It was. The one before Blake was Tony, yeah.
Okay.
After, well, pre-COVID or whatever you want to... 2019. How do I say this? The Colorado State has got a heck of a oh, I don't know what the word is. Not provenance. It's just like a thing. I don't know. There's something about it. Like all the majors that exist, especially the ones that are like grassroots like that and like Texas State, they have this event that's like their the signature event that just feels so...
Well, you have a lot of the players that have been here. It's kind of like going to Wrigley Field almost.
Mm.
You know, you can go play on a field that you know some of the greats have already played on. Yep. And it just has that, like, you walk... Because, like you were saying with the tournament room, I really like the tournament room. It reminds me of playing at a bar but in a hotel.
Huh.
Because it has that second level that you can go up to and you can watch matches up there. And you have the bar that's right there. But like I said, it almost has like that woodsy feel, like the Western. You know, you walk in and there's, you know, the Western, like an Old West theme type with the second level that you can just sit, like lean your head over and watch a bunch of really good matches, which yeah. you don't get to do that anywhere else. You're never that True. High up.
Yeah.
Yeah. The second floor component of this is very unique. I don't think there is no other venue in United States football that's like that, right? I can't think of one that comes right. close.
It kind of reminds me of the night in Hamburg where people were up in the mall, I think it was, and they were able to look down a lot yeah. of the foosball yeah. matches.
Yeah.
Jim's yeah, talked the about world. That. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, very cool. Well, I think Texas State tries to at least emulate it with the bleachers are pretty stacked. They have got good tall bleachers where you can see the six tables in the pit pretty well from wherever you are. But, yeah, I mean, that's the exception to the rule.
Yeah, that's the thing is the part that limits it, especially with foosball, is, of course, the table's so narrow that – and then half the time you have refs, so it's tough even when you're up there in the stands to kind of, like, look down sometimes,
mm-hmm.
which makes it tough. But the cool part, like with this, it's literally you're high up there, and you're able to see a lot of the match as well, too.
That's great. That's awesome. So I take it you'll be back again sometime soon.
Anytime I can try to come back, I'm going to try to come back. Like I said, I enjoy it because living in Florida, you don't get to see too many mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And just being able to walk outside, you go to Starbucks early in the morning, you look over to your right, and there's these huge mountains and even bigger mountains behind it with a bunch of snow all over it. It's beautiful.
Now, for you,
how often do you see mountains in Florida?
Or
do you just make those out of molehills?
We make them out of molehills. When I'm lying on the ground tired, I look up and there's something there. It looks like a mountain, but it's not.
I've been there.
It's the only place. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I hope that you and your family have fared well with the storms that have come through of late. I mean, I know the first was it Ian that came through
yep.
Your area in Tampa. That must have been a rough time.
We're always pretty lucky. If you look at Tampa really didn't get hit.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the way the hurricane goes when it goes in that circular motion, it actually pulled a lot of the water out of the Tampa Bay River or okay. Tampa Bay the bay.
Mm-hmm.
It pulled all that water out, and basically all that water went down south. So when it pulled it out, it all went somewhere, and it went down to like the Jupiter area where
right.
And all that. I mean, that was terrible what happened down there.
Right.
We've been very, very lucky, knock on wood, mm-hmm. for such a long time. I've lived in Tampa since I was 2 years old. So, we've never really had a direct hit. We've had a lot of scares. What happens is we get a lot of the, once it hits landfall, we get a lot of the tropical storm winds and
mm-hmm.
rain, which, to be honest with you, is what we're used to. We're used to during the rainy season, a bunch of winds and a bunch of a rain as it is. So, but that flooding down there was ridiculous. There, I saw a bunch of videos where the storm surge is 15 feet high, which basically, I mean,
wow.
it was really bad. But yeah. We're very lucky in Tampa.
Well,
very lucky.
Glad to hear that. Hopefully that you guys during the winter time, you'll enjoy some nice weather where we're freezing to death up here in the Northeast.
I'll say this once, I'll say it 1,000 times. Okay, there's a difference between 40 degree weather in Colorado and 40 degree weather in Tampa.
Oh, yeah.
So, if I was in Colorado, like we're here on Thursday morning, right before we came to the hotel, saw that it was 40 degrees. I couldn't believe it. Hold on. Believe it. That was 40 degrees because I was ready to take my jacket off, but in Florida at 40 degrees, it's like up here, if I took it a bucket of water and threw it on you and then it was 40 degrees, you'd know exactly how cold it is.
Yeah.
Because the humidity down there is just so, everything's just so wet feeling that having a bucket of water on you at 40 degrees is a lot different than the 40 up here. I was like, I can take my jacket off now. So, but yeah,
totally get
it. That's the best way I can explain it. Even though people say it's Florida, it's not that cold. Well, even 50 degrees with a bucket of water on you is freezing.
Well, Alan, I got to say that you have given us probably the best perspective yet when it comes to being there in Colorado, especially when, you know, somebody throws water on you. But this is great. I'm glad you had a chance.
Somebody was trying to call me.
That's okay. Not a problem. No, we're just glad we had a chance to hang out.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me.
Well, it's always our pleasure. We're looking forward to the near future here. If there's what tournaments do you think you'll be hitting next year?
I mean, I would love to be able to hit. I mean, of course, I'm going to be at Florida State. There's no question about that. I'd like to return to Texas State again. Hopefully, I can do that one. And then we'll see about Worlds. I'm not sure 100%. But I'd like to be able to come back to Colorado again. But I like going to Worlds, but I don't like going to Worlds just because of how expensive the flights are and really just how long the tournament is itself. But I'd really like to, because from Florida, you can't do a direct flight as well, too. So you literally have to stop, lay over, and then go there. So probably my goal is to go to Texas State, possibly the Bardo Hearn, and then probably Colorado again.
Awesome. Well, hopefully we'll get a chance to be in the same room, get a chance to chat in person, and have you back on.
Definitely. Anytime you guys want me to, I'm always willing.
Cool. Appreciate that. Well, best regards to the rest of your crew there in from Florida. Tell Tony we think his short hair looks cool.
He looks different. Looks different, but hey. He looks good.
Yeah. No, and it's been a while. I guess what, since 2015, since he cut his hair?
I have no idea. 2015, since I've been back, he's had the long hair. So.
Oh, gotcha.
Like I said, when I came back, he had long hair.
Adam?
So I'm not used to seeing him with short hair.
Adam, are you there?
Yeah.
Oop. Did you have any parting questions for Alan?
Yeah, where the hell do you have to? Where's your connecting flight from Florida to Kentucky? Like Portland? Like what? You go to New York?
Well, here's okay.
Like LaGuardia?
So here's the thing. It was North Carolina, and so the very last year that I went to Worlds, Donald Trump was in town in North Carolina. So we're in the plane for an extra hour, circling the airport until they gave us the okay to land.
Wow.
So what happened was we started to run out of fuel. So then they routed us to South Carolina so we could land, refuel. They wouldn't let us off the plane if you got off the plane and said, hey, I'm just going to rent a car. They basically said, you can't get your luggage here. Oh. You have to get it back in Kentucky. Or wherever you're going to be going. So right as we got back, we got fueled up. We went back to the airport in North Carolina. Once we got there, the person that had the key to the actual gate to open us up was an hour late. So we sat in there for an hour on the plane. Then they were begging us to take a flight the next day. We didn't show up until, I think, 1 in the morning on Friday night. And we're supposed to be there at like 6 or 6:30. So,
wow.
Yeah. But it's usually North Carolina, but because we always got to get onto a smaller plane as it is. So
I just would have assumed it would have been nonstop from Florida.
No,
like if anywhere,
the only nonstop is into, not Lexington, but, there's two airports. There's Lexington, right? There's
Bluegrass. Yeah.
And then there's the other one you can do nonstop, but then you have to rent a car for like an hour drive.
Yeah, I know. Is that Cincinnati, right? I think it's Cincinnati. It's got to be Cincinnati.
No, I think there's another one in Kentucky. I'm not 100%. I just know that if you screw up and you get the wrong one, you have to rent a car for an hour.
Yeah, you could do Cincinnati. Cincinnati is a strategic move for sure. Because it's about 45 minutes.
Yeah, so like I said, that's the issue that we have. And usually the flights are right around $300-$400, which, like I said, when we could fly here for $180 to Colorado, $200. Wow.
Alan, so, you are a librarian of knowledge about everything. I like it.
Useless knowledge?
No. I like it. Your insights. I mean, insights are one thing, but being able to actually explain them is another, you know. And the inverse of that is Mark Torres.
Yeah, where he doesn't explain it.
No, well, he does, but he doesn't have any ideas.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Well,
you try to take a bunch of kids that are 18 to 24 years old and try to explain to them why you're revamping the menu for no reason, but you have to get them to believe that this is a good thing. So that's kind of where it's come from.
You flashing back to Chili's?
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
Yes. Listen, this is a good thing.
I know.
And you turn around so going, this is not a good thing.
Look at that. It's 6 mozzarella sticks instead of 8, but they're bigger.
Yes, they're getting more, but they're not.
You have to sell that and have swag and smile and also say, would you like to try the desserts? I can get you one of these chunky monkeys. Now I'm flashing back.
Would you like the molten chocolate cake? We have bottomless chips, but we don't want to get them because we ran out an hour ago.
Nobody knows that goes to restaurants, the whole concept of 86 and something, or realizing that the coffee that they're getting is probably from earlier that morning and also decaf.
You're evil. Evil. Yeah.
You don't even want to know the things that goes on at restaurants.
Yep.
We're just there to survive, man.
Yep. Oh, believe me. It's
survival of the fittest? Is that what it is?
No, survival of the smartest.
Oh, okay.
It's amazing how all you got to do is ask any server where the best bar is after you're closed. They'll all know.
Yeah.
They'll tell you every bartender's name, which bartender to go to. They know it all.
You know,
$2 hospitality.
There's a podcast series right there, Tom.
Yes.
Getting all the foosers out there that are in the hospitality industry or have been in. Myself, there's Alan, there's Midori, of course.
Yep.
That would be funny.
Lindsay Albert.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to make it happen.
Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah. But so that was, of course, my final parting shots always end up being non sequiturs into a whole other thing. But Alan, I appreciate you coming on here. I appreciate your thoughts on foosball and everything. And I'm looking forward to I'm hoping to be at Florida State. Or maybe Thunderdome.
Don't eat what you ate last time.
Well, you know me.
Yeah, right.
No, it wasn't that. It was just it was just having a 5-year-old. I mean, it was maybe I should just homeschool him.
We'll do some
home. It's somebody else's home. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. No, I'm not. It's not a bad idea. See, this is what I'm talking about. This is when we collaborate. You know.
We'll come up with something good. I promise.
Right. It's going to be fine. They're larger, but they're less. Larger mozzarella. Anyways, all right, Tom. Sorry.
Yes. I can always rely upon Adam for get the finer points in. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And to bring up food. And to bring up food.
Oh,
that's it.
Yeah.
That's all I do. Finer points and food.
Oh, wow. So Alan Montro, thank you so much for joining us on Foosball Radio on the Road, and may your travels be safe ones going back to Florida.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
This has been a presentation of Foosball Radio, all rights reserved. Our sincere thanks to all our Patreon supporters. Foosball Radio on the Road.